TaxAct knows filing taxes can be confusing, so we have live experts on hand who can help answer any questions you may have. Questions like, can I claim my SUV as my home office if I answer work emails in my car? If I adopted 12 dogs this year, can I list them as dependents? And am I doing this right or am I doing this very, very wrong? Our experts have the answers to those questions and many others. TaxAct. Let's get them over with.
Shake up your weekly meal plan at Whole Foods Market with the Taste the Mediterranean event. Find sales on robust olive oils, plus juicy no antibiotics ever chicken, and hearty beef chuck. Complement your dinner with a sun-drenched salad featuring grape tomatoes, organic bell peppers, and crunchy cucumbers. And while you're cooking, graze on a mezze spread filled with charcuterie and delightful cheeses. Taste the Mediterranean at Whole Foods Market in-store and online.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Taoiseach and Defence Minister Simon Harris, while visiting the Curragh last weekend, said he is convinced that Ireland needs a jet fighter squadron. So do we really need jet fighters to meet our defence needs, or would the money be best spent otherwise? We'll be talking about all of this in a moment. But given the news overnight that Trump is cutting off military aid immediately to Ukraine, we're going first to Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
What is your reaction to this precipitate action by Trump? We weren't expecting it to happen so soon, and we've learned now that it will happen immediately. Even stuff in transit to Ukraine, in Poland, ready to be deployed into Ukraine, is being stopped.
Yes, it's an immediate thing. It's obvious that Trump has been working with his people over the last day or so and decided to go ahead straight away. It is a surprise that it's so soon, particularly because of all the things that have been going on in London with the European meeting that Starmer was actually hosting. But it happened, as you say, it's everything almost from now. Stuff that's already in Poland ready for transit won't now be transited. And essentially this applies to almost all the means of fighting the war. As far as we know, intelligence is still being shared and provided. And as far as we know, satellite communications are still operating, including the lot that's basically owned by Musk.
I mean, there was a story that the gun that was put to Zelensky's head, metaphorically, was that Musk would pull Starlink and thus render air defense very, very much more difficult for Ukraine. And this is what led Zelensky to the Oval Office, ostensibly to sign a deal, but in fact to be humiliated.
That's certainly possible. I mean, it's interesting, if you watch the entire press conference from start to finish, the 45 minutes, the curious thing is, early on, it was really quite good-natured. Obviously, Zelensky was very thankful to the Americans. He made that clear. Trump was actually really quite, in a way, positive about the Ukrainians, talked about their bravery. And it came really towards the end, and this is very much prompted by J.D. Vance. And essentially, it's almost as though he decided that they would get tough. And it's not at all clear that the whole thing was pre-choreographed. And there's some thoughts that, in fact, this is partly one of Vance's ploys early in the administration to show that this is a vice president who has much more power.
But he was invisible for the first 3 weeks, I suppose, and then he made that speech in Munich. I mean, yeah. I found it almost nauseating to watch Vance give out to Zelensky for lecturing, as he put it, America on Ukraine, a subject upon which Zelensky is uniquely qualified to talk, whereas Vance came to Europe and lectured all of Europe in very hectoring and ill-informed terms.
Absolutely. And I think this is one of the things that's surprising. It's interesting. I mean, the press conference happened on Friday afternoon. I was listening to the BBC's Any Questions in the evening. The first question was people to comment on what had happened. And there was massive applause from the audience supporting Ukraine. Quite extraordinary. And it was a large audience in Dunblane Cathedral as it happened. And that was an indication, I think, the view within Britain and view within quite a lot of Europe as well. That is not necessarily the view in the United States, where things are still very, very, really broken up in many ways, very divided, let polarized.
The former National Security Advisor, former ambassador to the UN, John Bolton, was interviewed by Caitlin Collins on CNN during the week, last week, And he said that all of this stuff, peace in Ukraine, is all about, and this seems incredibly, I suppose, silly on the part of Trump, that Obama got the Peace Prize, the Nobel Peace Prize, and simply because of that, Trump wants it. And the simplest win for him is to stop the war in Gaza, stop the war in Ukraine, and lo and behold, Trump gets the Peace Prize.
I don't think it's going to be anywhere near a peace prize if stopping the war in Gaza is getting rid of all the Palestinians doing full-scale ethnic cleansing.
No, but can he be so stupid to think that's realistic? And I heard Marco Rubio yesterday being interviewed again, and he was saying Trump wants peace. Trump wants peace, 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 peace. The fact that it might be an unjust peace, an unfair peace, an obsequious peace, doesn't come into Rubio's calculations.
Well, this is where we have the problem, trying to work out where Trump is really coming from. I mean, it really is. And I think there's been an assumption on the European side that he is not so sort of extraordinary and extreme as he's turning out to be. I mean, there's a lot of concern, obviously, about the nature of the Trump relationship with Russia. But that is in addition to what he's trying to do now. This is a different kind of person, a different kind of president. And I think people have got to get used to it pretty quickly, because this is probably an early sign of what we're going to see over the coming 3.5 years.
Can Europe, during this pause and review period, which is what the White House has said, can Europe step into the breach and maintain Ukraine's ability to defend itself?
Only to an extent. I mean, there was an interesting piece by an analyst who'd been in Ukraine recently, an American, experienced American analyst on these issues, and he reckoned that about 30% of the military capability used in the war is coming directly or indirectly through US hands. So in other words, there will be a certain crippling. There have been some changes, though. People tend to forget that this is a very different sort of war from when it started. Drones are hugely important. 70% of all the casualties on the battlefield are caused not by artillery or missiles, but by drones. And there, the balance isn't quite so sort of against the Ukrainians, because obviously drones can be used most effectively when armies are trying to advance. Now, at the moment, the Russians are trying to get through over the Dnipro River near Kherson to get territory to the west of the river. And they're putting huge effort into that, taking huge casualties. But it's proving very difficult. Now, all that means is that the Russians are determined to make as much progress as they can, but the costs are huge. It probably means that for, well, long weeks or short months, the Ukrainians can hang on through in towards the summer months, but not for indefinitely by a long shot. The American impact will happen, and it may happen quickly, particularly if Starlink comes in and intelligence is no longer shared. But in the short term, the Ukrainians can continue. But I think the probability is that essentially behind the scenes, in spite of what the Europeans are doing, Zelensky will be suggested quietly by the Europeans that he's got to do some sort of deal fairly quickly, because the Europeans are not sufficiently united to come up with sufficient resources to help the Ukrainians long term.
Now, we've been talking earlier on the program about the possibility that Trump is compromised in some way, that he is wittingly or unwittingly a Russian asset, not a spy, but an asset, in other words. And one of our professors here, Donald Bachoin, speaking to us in Brussels this morning, said that whether it is, you know, a deliberate signing up of Trump by Russia, effectively, de facto, the way he's behaving, he has become a Russian asset.
I think there are two ways of looking at this. Yes, you're certainly getting the rumours that in some way the Russians have a hold over Trump. The other view is that, in a sense, Trump really understands oligarchy and feels very much happy with it and part of it. And he recognises Russia in its current manifestation as an oligarchy system, and that basically he can work with that because you already have that in the United States. It was, what's the name, one of the senators recently, Bernie Sanders, just last week was pointing out that the three richest people in the United States, starting with Musk, the richest three people in the United States have as much wealth as the poorest half of the entire population, 170 million people. And I think Trump really admires that kind of wealth and power. And of course, he's part of it to some extent himself. Now, if that's the case, that would be the other explanation, that this is really the development of the world oligarchy, in a sense. Now, that's a pretty gross term to use, but there's an element of it here. And I think the answer is we simply don't know. But certainly there's some explanation which goes beyond the easily explainable. And it may well be that it's that broad one, or quite possibly that in some way the Russians have a specific hold on Trump himself.
It would be treasonous, actually, of Trump were he to behave in his own self-interest to the destruction of his own country.
Shake up your weekly meal plan at Whole Foods Market with the Taste the Mediterranean event. Find sales on robust olive oils, plus juicy no antibiotics ever chicken and hearty beef chuck. Complement your dinner with a sun-drenched salad featuring grape tomatoes, organic bell peppers, and crunchy cucumbers. And while you're cooking, graze on a mezze spread filled with charcuterie and delightful cheeses. Taste the Mediterranean at Whole Foods Market in-store and online.
TaxAct can think of a million things more fun than filing taxes. TaxAct is going to name some now. Sitting in traffic. Folding a fitted bedsheet. Listening to your coworker talk about his fantasy team. Digging a hole. Digging an even larger hole next to that original hole. Unfortunately, TaxAct's filing software can't make taxes fun. But TaxAct can help you get them done. TaxAct. Let's get them over with.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
The wrongs we must right. The fights we must win. The future we must secure together for our nation. This is what's in front of us. This determines what's next for all of us. We are Marines. We were made for this.
It certainly would, and I think he probably sees that in some ways what he's doing is actually making America great again. That is not the case. I mean, it is already clear that across much of the global south, the precipitate withdrawal of US aid, with all its problems, with all its limitations, is causing a great deal of anger, because many people were dependent on some of that aid. Now, there's obviously aid is always used as a vehicle of foreign policy. The United States is certainly very good at it in that way. But the longer-term reality is the United States is probably diminishing its influence at the moment, not increasing it. But that is not something which I think the Republican right fully understands at the present time, and certainly not something that Trump understands.
Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University, thank you very much for joining us. Well, in studio with me now, Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel and Airport Safety and Security Expert, and Declan Power, Defence and Security Analyst and Expert. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning,
and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, we started by talking about the need for air defence in terms of not just radar, but aeroplanes, a squadron of fighter jets. Kevin, what say you?
Well, we've had nothing to defend our airspace since about World War II. That's the truth of it, you know. And now we're finally getting into the realm that we should look after our own airspace. We have a large chunk of it in that the space we're responsible for is above our land area and the sea area. So it's the bit that goes out as far as the 12-mile limit as such. But we have a huge element of controlled Irish airspace going out, you know, well over the Atlantic. And 80 or 85% of the traffic that goes across Ireland is in fact transatlantic travel. So we get a lot of money from that, and we're very important from that point of view. But we are basically naked and have been for years and years. So this is going to be a phased approach, I think, before we get to the fighter jet syndrome, as it were. We need radars first, because we cannot tell what aircraft are above our airspace unless they're corresponding and playing, so to speak, the game.
So if they haven't their transponder switched
exactly.
on, we can't see them.
And there have been cases of Russian aircraft 50 miles off the west coast of Clew Bay with their transponder switched off, and we wouldn't have known about it except NATO sent down fighters from Norway and then from Scotland and then from the Bay of Biscay and then down to Portugal and that kind of thing. So we'll take some interest in our own, command and control.
Okay, so we have to see the skies first.
Yes.
And then if we want to put aircraft in the skies,
yes,
it's going to be expensive.
It is. Their figures have been quoted, and I was in touch with people last night, former generals and so forth. They said some of the figures are wild, some of them are not. And there are people out there who want to sell us different kinds of aircraft. Like, are we going to invest in F-16s, which you and I looked at the air shows many years ago, still in production, by the way.
Still in production.
Still very much, a popular thing. Or do you look something made in Europe, for example, or at least, sold in Europe and sponsored in Europe. And there's different kinds of aircraft. There's a couple of fundamentals here we're going to have to look at first. Do you want aircraft that would be, for example, able to chase a hijacked aircraft or an aircraft in distress?
That means you've got to, if they're travelling at top speed, we have to be supersonic.
Pat, you're hitting the nail on the head. Do you want to do something like a fast jet trainer, but that's got the same speed as the aircraft at 500 knots? You'll never catch it, therefore you can't do, you can't do the job properly, you can't investigate. And this happens, by the way, three or four times a month over Europe. People don't understand that. They've aircraft which lose communication, so the local fighter force goes up and looks at it. And the French do it on a regular basis with Ryanair flights, because Ryanair captains have told me this. They look out the window and say there's two Mirage 2000s outside the window, just as practice to see they can do it, because it's a big country like that. So we're behind the
captain nods at the fighter
pilot.
That's
exactly it.
Give each other the thumbs up and off they go.
And the passengers get scared because they're not told about it. This is how it works. But we don't do that. We can't do it, and we'll have to get doing it. The next thing is, do we want aircraft that, quite apart from the speed, that are going to be on quick reaction alert, what they do in the UK, north and south, and in other countries. That's QRA. They sit down waiting at 15 minutes notice. Do you want aircraft?
So you have to have multiple crews then.
Absolutely. And you have to be able to say, we're going to control our airspace. And the UK does it four or five times a month. They have alerts like that. Not practice ones, but just looking at aircraft and that kind of thing. That's a different element. Do we need to do that, or are there threats we should, look after?
Now, they couldn't be stationed in Baldonnell, not the appropriate location, or indeed runway.
No, Shannon Airport, I visited last year. I do it once a year. It's a very friendly place, by the way. It's got fantastic airspace. And more importantly, it's got a 10,000-foot runway, which is really well worthwhile for that kind of thing. There is a caveat, though, if I can use it now, and I don't want to be negative in this because I'm all in favour of defence. But the maintenance of these aircraft have been mentioned out loud last week as being given to a private company. There's a problem there, because I did a technical visit to a place called RAF Valley, where they've got 40 Hawks. You'll sometimes see them. If you're driving from, Holyhead into the UK proper, like that, across Wales, they fly by day and you can see black aircraft doing circuits, that kind of thing. The maintenance of that has always been given to a private company. But the manager of the company told me on the visit over there, we could never do this, he says, for aircraft which are going to combat, in case, first of all, there's a maintenance problem with workers who've got a trade union dispute. That's okay for training aircraft. They will never do it with aircraft that are used operationally, because they can't depend on the people in case there's a problem, and you can send them into a combat zone. Civilians don't go that far from that point of view. So
the idea that down in Shannon you'd have a civilian company maintaining these aircraft,
you
that's
have
not
to be
really
sure.
On.
It shouldn't happen, to my view, or if you do have to have it, it has to be assured. No other force does it in Europe, as far as I can tell. They do maintenance, certainly, for the aircraft used in training, but they don't do it. They use their own forces, people in uniform, who keep the maintenance records safe of the frontline aircraft.
Now, given that we do trust our nearest neighbour in, to a large extent, I won't say 1,000%, given the history of the troubles and all the rest, why not simply enter into a formal contract with them? Pay them a lot of money every year, cheaper though than buying our own and maintaining our own. So they become our subcontractor, if you like, to defend our airspace.
Does that compromise our military neutrality? I don't know that. It's alleged out loud that this thing exists already. Now, I did a course with the RAF some years ago, an air defence executives course, and not once. We saw their bunkers, we saw their defence stuff. I don't discuss it because, of course, it's, Chatham House rules like that. Yeah. So I know what they can do from that point of view. But not once did they say, by the way, we look after your airspace as well. They did Northern Ireland all right, but they didn't say they had any coverage on the Republic, and that these QRA aircraft, the quick reaction alert, would in fact entertain an airspace and fly into our airspace, but it was never mentioned. So I don't know if enough people know it. The place to discuss this, of course, is in Dáil Éireann, I suppose.
Declan.
Pat, just to take up some of what Kevin is saying there to maybe amplify a couple of points, everything Kevin said, I'd agree 100% with it, and I would add into it the issue with regards to air defence, aside from cost, aside from maintenance, is this strategic management, which Kevin was just touching base on. The RAF have 100 years corporate memory of this kind of stuff. We would be developing this from scratch. So even, you know, with regards to the procurement, I think it's a bit, it's a little bit of a red herring. It's welcome that the Taoiseach has tasked the department to cost it. Even if he turned around and said cost it with a view to purchase, I think, Kevin, it would be at least 5-6 years before you'd see them.
5 years minimum.
And that's optimistic.
Yeah.
So I think we should focus on some things that are closer to our needs right now. First of all, none of this is relevant until we're still procuring the military grade radar, the primary radar system. Let's get that in place. Now, let's come back to the point you made. And I suspect that therein lies part of the solution. Not necessarily subcontract the whole thing out to the RAF, but we do have a memorandum of understanding on defence matters with the United Kingdom since 2015. And we've had a memorandum of understanding since 1952 with regards to this agreement that nobody wants to talk about. It was the biggest mistake that the government have made is not being upfront about it. It doesn't contravene anything from a constitutional point of view because it's not a mutual defence pact. The United Kingdom are more than happy to have a friendly arrangement of this nature. It suits their needs. It suits our needs. And from
they want to see what's going on in our skies too.
They do. And so if we have the primary radar system in place, that puts us in the driving seat. We have the air picture. We can see what's happening. And then we can have a realistic relationship where the UK or the RAF in particular are happy to be tasked. We can set up that strategic management system to be tasked if they have to come into our airspace. And then in conjunction with them, we can develop the strategic capacity to be able to develop our own air assets in time to come. But this is a slow burn thing. If we want to do it properly, what I would fear is that we might throw a load of money at this for cosmetic optics and end up with substandard equipment that do a substandard job and that satisfies nobody or nothing and gets in the way when a crisis happens.
Okay, now some of the comments coming in. Swedish Saab JAS-39 Gripen, good bang for your buck. Take Knock Airport, place 6 of them there, another 6 in Ballydonnell. That would cover our entire country. The other suggestion would be long-range drones for long-range patrolling off our western coast, which would flee up our naval fleet.
Well, you mentioned the Navy. I think this is the elephant in the room. Our naval service, which there is now in a few years' time, like the Air Corps, going to change name to the Navy. Well, we can change name, but we need to invest. We need the resources. Our naval personnel are amongst the most qualified in Europe, if not the Western world. They have gone on the courses to prove that. However, we need not just the vessels, we need sonar, we need the capacity to know what's going on underneath the surface, and we need the coordination procedures in place because there are a lot of people active in our seas. We just don't know about it. We do know from a Western perspective because the French and the British share intelligence with us. But if we have more of an input into that, then we are more in the driving seat of our own sovereign control of our seas.
Now, it's interesting. Yesterday we had the Finnish foreign minister in the studio with us and they spend, I think, 2.45% of their GDP. We spend 1/10 of that. And yes, they're the same population as us.
And as that lady said herself, they have no choice. They live right up close to the bear and they know what Russian aggression is like. And when we talk about Russian aggression, we're not just talking about bombs and bullets. We're talking about the undermining of your state and your capacity, as the Estonians found in 2007 when Russian cyber attack brought Tallinn to a standstill. So from Ireland's perspective, in terms of our defence needs, which we need to really keep a close eye on, and we need to manage our strategic awareness on this, they're rapidly shifting and changing. They're not likely to be primarily kinetic, but we do need to be able to manage our space, both literally airspace, sea space, and we need to be able to respond to insidious threats such as espionage, intelligence, theft of intellectual property, and disinformation and cyber attacks. Not to mention the critical underwater infrastructure.
Do we have, you talk about, you know, the corporate memory. I mean, even in the political sense, have we got the kind of people in Dáil Éireann and the kind of advice to them that can make these strategic military decisions wisely?
Two quick things, Pat. Our representatives in Dáil Éireann are very literate in many respects about international affairs, except when it comes to defence. And they, just like the population, are very much open to the risk of mischievous disinformation. I would argue that investing a little bit more in external expertise with a view to testing and developing critical examination of our process, because we're in danger of groupthink and we're in danger of talking to ourselves too much. We can take in for example, the Air Corps are having an external review to help them design new processes for the Air Force. It's an American company. There's been some controversy about that because of the current geopolitical situation. But forget about that for a second. Their experience and expertise in helping us knit together what we need, we should be doing that a little bit more across the board.
Just Kevin, a small point down in the weeds, if I may. You mentioned the Saab Gripen, an excellent aircraft, yeah, which I'm sure the Air Corps will look at some stage. I don't have shares in the company. It's used by four air forces, and last week Colombia in South America ordered it, having had a competition like that. It has a Swedish-built American General Electric F-404 jet inside it like that, and yesterday a man called Mr. Trump said, no, it's an American engine, you can't sell it to Colombia. So that's, you know, the long arm of the law, yeah, saying he doesn't like Colombia, therefore they're not going to get a Swedish business.
A final point on apropos, really, of this, generally speaking.
Yes.
The new Chief of Staff of the Defence Forces, it looks like it's going to be Brigadier General Russell Mulcahy.
Indeed, yes. He's a fine officer, let Absolutely. Me say that. Yes. Yep.
And
fine,
he is going to, unlike his predecessors, he'll be granted full command and control of all military formations. What does that actually mean?
If I'm correct, Pat, not just yet. He is coming in the old system. He'll be appointed as Chief of Staff of the Defence Forces. And currently, going back to the post-Civil War era, it's a little bit like the Catholic Church, the way bishops yes. are appointed by the Pope.
And they answer to the Pope.
So you have other generals. When we had more than two brigades, though, the generals of each of those brigades had a direct reporting line to the minister. The chief was the coordinator, if you like. What we are now doing is bringing our military into line with our European partners. So you have a chief of the defence staff. Who will answer to the minister. And he will then have the chief of the army, chief of the navy, chief of the air
force
report to him.
And rightly so. He'll be responsible after all these years, you know.
And we're getting a better man than General Clancy.
21st century military stuff is what we need.
Yes. And meantime, the current man, General Clancy, is heading off to Europe.
In a higher rank. He's a lieutenant general, going to be a general in the next couple of months, and I wish him well on his trips to Brussels.
And I'd echo that. I think he's the first Irish general, full general
rank. Since
the Second World War era. Did we have a full general?
No, we left a general then. Right. So I think he's the first general, I wish him well, yes.
All right, on that well-wishing note, Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel and Airport and Safety and Security Expert, and Declan Power, Defence and Security Expert. Thank you both very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
TaxAct can think of a million things more fun than filing taxes. TaxAct is going to name some now. Sitting in traffic. Folding a fitted bedsheet. Listening to your coworker talk about his fantasy team. Digging a hole. Digging an even larger hole next to that original hole. Unfortunately, TaxAct's filing software can't make taxes fun. But TaxAct can help you get them done. TaxAct. Let's get them over with.